that's one of the things about religion that we have to remember when we're talking about that makes it such a hot topic issue is because we're talking about law. Who gets to be God? Who gets to be God's deputies? Who is the Most High? Who is the divine authority? It's all about the claim to the Most High. The only way that somebody can be higher than us is if we give away our power. Because there's nobody. We're all equal. But we're not equal in our knowledge. So ultimately, I think it does have to be a hierarchy, but it has to be a cooperative hierarchy, like a bee colony. It's about what our value system is, what we care about.
Hello, Hive Mind. Today is February 22nd, 2021. I am your host, Nate Kapp, joined by co-host Brandon Martin. Welcome to the 40th Cubbyhole Podcast, where important topics are unveiled, discussed, and tested. Our website is cubbyhole.com. That's cubbyhole.com. As of now, this show comes out every Friday at 12 p.m. Pacific time, and please make sure to start at podcast number one if this is your first time hearing the show. Brandon, how you doing, man?
I'm doing pretty good, Nate. It's very exciting to get back on here with you.
Yeah, it's so awesome, man. This is going to be a really jam-packed show. I'm very excited because symbolism is one of the greatest things you could ever learn, and I'm just beyond stoked that I get to share this with you. So it's really cool.
Yeah, I've been looking forward to discussing these topics with you myself because I know how well we do with symbolism, both of us. We both have something to bring to the table when it comes to this. I believe that we both are very astute in symbolic understanding, especially when it comes to some of the topics that we're going to cover here today. So I'm very, very looking forward to getting this information out to the people, and hopefully all the listening audience can take value from this information and utilize it in their own daily lives.
Right. You know, we really hope to inspire people with this kind of content because symbolism is life-changing for sure. Something I wanted to mention that I thought was really cool is this is show number 40. So we have the Cubbyhole podcast show started last year in February on the 27th. So we have done 40 shows now with this one since then. And I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I think it's amazing how much content we've cranked out in a year. And we really started to put more effort into it later, you know, at the end of last year, and started cranking out, you know, multiple episodes each month. And it's just astounding how far we have come, you know, so quickly with a new podcast like this. So I think we've done very well with that.
For sure. And by the way, some really cool other news. The Cubbyhole podcast is now on the site minds.com. That's MINDS.com. And I want to thank my girlfriend, Cindy, for helping get all the shows up. Because, you know, it's really hard to do all this alone or, you know, with Brandon. And I know, you know, Douglas is also helping a lot. So I want to thank all you guys for sure. And if there's anything wrong with Minds, it's definitely all, it's all Cindy's fault. So
we'll keep that in mind.
I'm kidding.
Pun intended.
Also, the Cubbyhole podcast is on Apple. It's also on TuneIn Radio, Spotify, and iHeartRadio if you prefer a different way of listening, or you know someone who'd listen if only it were on a platform that they'll listen to. And also, Cubbyhole is on BitChute. So many places to listen just in case you're not wanting to, you know, go to the website. And I totally understand. But, you know, you want to go to the website, especially for the slides. So keep that in mind. The BitChute is up, right, Brandon?
Yes, BitChute is up. I have been having troubles getting the videos uploaded because their network seems to have an issue processing videos every once in a while. But yes, BitChute is up and people can check that out. You know, Douglas is also on BitChute. I think his name is AxePope1, I believe it is, the same as his YouTube channel. But I personally don't have a YouTube channel, a BitChute channel up, but we do have the Cubbyhole podcast on there.
Nice. Yeah, it's just so important that we are putting this information spread out because, you know, you just never know when we're going to get censored and in some way or another, and we just want to keep on putting out as much content as possible, good content, that is. So last week was pretty awesome. Nathan Ridette was on the show, and we talked about natural law, moral relativism, symbolism, religion, and the current medical tyranny event that's still heavily affecting the world. And it was really great to have him on the show and hear his wisdom. So definitely check his work out if you haven't already. And we definitely hope to have him back on in the near future for sure. Today, Brandon and I are going to cover more on subversive symbolism, especially regarding stellar subversive symbolism within the methods of manipulation. Also, we will be explaining Freemasonry, what it is and what it is not, as well as what a Freemason is and is not. Too many people have the wrong ideas about this subject, and I'm telling you, you can't get much closer to truth or source without understanding the science of Freemasonry. So just make sure to listen all the way through because this show is critical to understanding the rest of the shows following this one, especially regarding Freemasonry. And there will be slides for this show today, so please make sure to go on Cubbyhole, on the Cubbyhole website under podcast to follow along. And before we go any further, Brandon is going to give us an important Seed for Growth conference update.
Yes, I think it's very crucial that people understand what's going on with the Seed for conference. Unfortunately, due to this pandemic and medical tyranny that we've had going on, I've had a lot of trouble getting this conference going since last year. We had to postpone it last year, and I had been told that there wouldn't be any spots at the location until next year, which is this year now, around the same time. And I was like, okay, well, I'll go further with that. And now currently they have mandated social distancing at the university for events like that, and they have mandated mask wearing. So since the social distancing cuts the seating in half, it's just not financially or feasible for enough people to show up to actually make this conference happen. And I'm having a lot of ethical issues with that as well. So I have decided to do the Seed for conference online, most likely through Zoom conference, the Zoom conference platform, that is. That is subject to change, but that should be, I will have that information together by the mid of next month. And that will all be updated on the websites and updated on the Facebook. And we will be making public announcements about this. I also have issued refunds for people who have bought tickets. And I had started that in the past week. And I've almost got all of them out. But a few people have not contacted me to confirm their email addresses for me to get their payments back to them. So if they could do that, if you're listening, just make sure that you read your email because I sent you an email, and just confirm your payment method that you would like, and I will get that refund out to you immediately. I also am accepting donations for the small expenses of the subscription fee for the Zoom conference or one of the other platforms. I have had gracious donations from a few of the previous ticket buyers, and I thank them from the deepest part of my heart, because it's still going to cost me a little bit of money to do this, and I am losing a little bit of money. One of the other issues I had forgotten to mention was that travel issues for a lot of people. Hold on a second. My dog's drinking water in the background here. Okay.
Water break.
So one of the other issues, right? So one of the other issues that I forgot to mention is that there has been travel issues. So some of these speakers that were coming from overseas have notified me that it's just not looking feasible to do that. And we all had been thinking about that for a while because of the mandations and restrictions. So that really puts a hamper on getting these people into the country and stuff like that. But that's not the sole reason for that. But all the speakers are still the same. They have all been confirmed. And we do have some extra speakers that we will be bringing in because of this. There are pros and cons to doing all of this. One of the pros that I'd like to mention is that all people are going to be capable of accessing this Zoom conference and or this conference online. And this means that people from all over the world can tune in and they don't have to worry about the travel expenses and things like that. So I think that's a great benefit. It also reduces the amount of monetary association with this as well, you know, so people don't really have to buy anything, but donations are definitely welcome to help get this conference moving. And the final thing to say on this is that it is the same date and time. So as far as has there been any changes in the date? No, it will be March 15th and 16th. And the times should all stay the same as well. So keep your eyes open. And for the public announcements, it will be up on the Cubbyhole website. There'll be new flyers sent out to people, probably through emails. And also, you know, we will be talking about it here on the Cubbyhole podcast as well in the coming weeks.
I really appreciate you taking the time to get that all figured out and arranged. And, you know, it's so much work, and to have to work around all this other garbage tyranny is just so frustrating. And it's like I told Nathan Redette last week, it's, you know, it's kind of like the fact that we don't get to see each other, you know, doing this conference through a screen is kind of like a mask, but it's not going to shut us up, at least. And, you know, we just got to keep trying and doing everything that we can to the best of our ability. So
I agree with you, Nate. It is very horrible that they are forcing us into a corner like this, that we actually have to use things like this where we can't come together at this level. But I expect no less, and I expect that it's going to get far worse as we move forward with this political rhetoric that they are spinning. So I do think that we need to be prepared to use whatever means and tools that we have at our disposal to make sure that we continue to push forward with this information.
Right. Well, I'm going to go ahead and get into the content for this show. I wanted to remind everyone that in show number 38, Brandon gave a really great introduction to subversive symbolism, and you may hear some similar rhetoric in the beginning of this show today, especially on symbolism itself. I want to really expand on this topic. And by the way, Brandon, I wanted to add to your owl symbolism. I just realized that looking down over the Statue of Liberty, it actually kind of looks like a giant owl. I don't know if you've seen that before, but I thought that was pretty interesting. So it's like, you know, around the base of the statue.
Right. That's interesting. I'll have to pull that up and check it out. I have not seen that, actually. I believe I remember that there was a star around the Statue of Liberty But I could be mistaken about that. But yeah, I would love to check that out.
Something else that I wanted to say. Here's one for you, Brandon. Owl is symbolic of or equal to truth because the truth hurts. And what do we typically say when something hurts?
Owl. Yeah, I know. I was just thinking that when you brought that up. That's amazing. Yeah, that's good synchronicity right there.
Yeah. So, moving on. The student who's ready to listen and learn will find great universal benefit if he or she is serious in this study of symbolism. This is about becoming symbol literate because it's about becoming aware of a language that transcends your typical vernacular or average dialect. So what is it that makes humans so intertwined with symbolism? Something I think most can logically agree on is we were created with ears to listen. We were created with eyes to see. We were created with mouths to eat and speak, and a nose to sense, a heart for rhythm, and a middle or third eye to do all of those things together spiritually. We listen for the message. We look for the signs. We speak what we learn through rhetoric in order to understand what we know better. Through the rise of consciousness, we gain a sense for what we need to do and where we need to go. We find the rhythm within that matches the rhythm of truth. We eat the knowledge or information. And it's the eye within that sees the creator and understands what the universe is trying to gift us. And if we are paying attention, we'll be gifted with what we need to see. We'll be given the opportunity to recognize that we have a spiritual, intelligent, universal communication with the all, the creator, the universe. And one of the most amazing ways this is done is through a type of mathematical, geometric, seen and unseen fabric known as symbolism. Symbols are a pure universal type of language all through the universe, a language of way less ambiguity than written words, because written words have barriers because of all the different dialects. Words are fragmented symbols, but of pure symbols. And of course, in our modern day, we need words to help describe the meaning of symbols in order to reconnect to their purity. Symbolism and allegory are what we use to decode the words of ancient texts. You know, and that's the sacred science. And it's also what we use to learn lessons with and to unveil mystical secrets within. The word symbol is derived from a Greek verb, which signifies to compare one thing with another. To be without desire for insight or imagination when studying symbolism, to basically not be stimulated beyond the obvious, then symbols remain a locked and literal mystery. And I hear many people say there's no scientific proof that symbolism actually does anything or that symbols are only what we want them to mean. And the truth is, there's way, way, way more to it. And symbolism actually is a science that modern science is barely catching up to, honestly. And that's really what needs to be understood. And we're going to observe this. The mystics have been preserving and teaching the sacred science of symbols pretty much forever. And to the minds who dismiss symbolism as an only man-made construct, then You know, just ask yourself why geometry is found all throughout nature. Okay, so now let's look at some organic visual symbols found in nature to get a better idea of why and how symbols are ubiquitous and reveal our connection to them, simply using nature's spiritual mirror or the tool of correspondence in connection with some high-powered microscopes. If you go to the slide with the green geometric hexagonal figure, this is a photo published back in 2012. And with some really amazing technology, researchers managed to capture this beautiful photo of an atom. And what we're looking at here is the smallest unit of ordinary matter that forms a chemical element. And an adult human is made up of around 7 octillion atoms. And that's a very interesting number, 7 octillion. So looking at this photo, it's important to note the individual geometric atomic bonds are coherently visible, and the hexagonal shape is clearly evident with an arrangement of 13 hexagons, which corresponds to Metatron's cube, also very similar to a beehive. And Metatron's cube includes all 5 Platonic solids hidden inside itself, symbolizing the underlying geometric patterns found throughout our universe. And you can see those 5 Platonic solids in the slides. And they are the tetrahedron, the octahedron, the hexahedron, the icosahedron, and the dodecahedron. Also, you'll see the slide of the Metatron's cube next to the atom, which is very undeniably correspondent. So let's look at some other magnifying geometric particles. And there's the, as you see in the slides, you'll see the snowflake. Now look at that. That is vibratory intelligent geometry right there. And of course, as are all of these images. And this snowflake is an organic symbol as well. And it's made up of what? It's made up of water. And what are humans mostly made of? That's right, water. Water is information, very intelligent information. And when we study the science of cymatics, then we recognize the intelligent vibratory communication happening between material symbolism and the spiritual plane of symbolism, because it's about understanding their relationship and how our subconscious mind is relating them to organize, to recognize the deeper connection. And when we become conscious of this, we organically connect and resonate with symbolism in a much higher and aware way. And if you're looking at the slides and you're seeing the giant cubes, the tannish, like sandish looking cubes, those are actually super magnified grains of salt, which are hexahedrons. And then we have the dodecahedron expressed as a living organism. And technically, it's a coastal phytoplanktonic algae. And it's interesting because the dodecahedrons have 12 faces, but as you see here, there are 5 concaved folds in each pentagon shape, which means there's actually 60 faces, which is pretty wild. And then the green chickweed grain of pollen, and again, in the shape of the dodecahedron. It's pretty amazing. So the universe is made of pure vibration or waves of motion. Nothing is at rest. Symbols harmonize throughout the universe. symbolism resonates. It's about understanding phi harmonics, which are a natural part of our evolving field of consciousness. So the reason we have to observe these things like this in nature is because it educates us to become symbol literate, which gives us a better understanding that we are, in fact, symbols ourselves. We're symbols vibrating and having the potential to align with other symbols in order to discover higher communication with the universe or the creator or nature itself. The more we discover ourselves, the more symbols can reveal or reflect something to us. Symbols are a type of eternal spiritual landmark filled with heritage left to those who are willfully seeking to align with the one great spirit within nature. Basically, to align with that which is pure in order to be fully raised. The esoteric study of tarot is the Gnostic core of the great book of symbolism. And it is an occult tradition that has been around for thousands of years and mostly used by the wrong people who use it against people who are ignorant to the symbols as a means of control, control over the mind. And when the mind is controlled by the exterior or by exterior beings, then the spirit and body fall into that control automatically. And when we hear the phrase, awaken the spirit, it simply implies reconnecting with spiritual nature, or, you know, what's known as the one great spirit. So awakening the spirit is about taking back our rightful position in nature as sovereign beings. And becoming symbol literate is a major key to understanding our connection to nature, which is, in turn, it is freeing. That's what it's about, freeing ourselves. And it is said that the impact of a symbol and the pursuit to decode a symbol may lead us in many different directions. And one of the first things a good symbol does for us is it shows us just how ignorant we are. Albert Pike, a Freemason, said that man cannot nearly be told a truth greater than his own capacity to understand. Therefore, the only way in which that can be imparted, for which there is not already an available content of understanding, is by means of symbols. Symbols are important because they cause the individual to increase his own understanding by the contemplation of them. They cause him to draw out from himself a background or a subconscious power to know which he has not yet advanced in a factual or objective manner. And something I want to stress about that is the symbolical or emblematic form of instruction found in the ancient Egyptian hieroglyphical method or principle, which constitutes the kind of education in which the derived word educo implies, which means to draw out or to develop from within. So an educated person isn't just someone who has an abundance of generalized or specialized knowledge. An educated person is someone who's developed the faculties of the mind that they may selflessly acquire anything they want or its equivalent without violating the rights of others, while knowing how to transcend dogma and be honest enough to realize their ignorance, you know, recognizing how much work still needs to be done. And as Brandon pointed out in the other show, symbols are neither good nor evil. So we have to get that out of our head if we're going to be an adult in our pursuit to go further in this study. looking at the slides with the G-square and compass, the Illuminati triangle eye, the inverted pentagram goat head, the Baphomet, and the swastika, these are all symbols that strike fear in many people. And it's understandable. Not only are many people made to fear these symbols because of the evil within the stories we're told about them and what they're tied to, but because most are simply ignorant of them. Most people don't have a clue or don't even want to know about these symbols. And this behavior is perfect for the dominators of this world, as it creates an easy opportunity to enslave their minds subversively. The minds of the ignorant masses, that is. And to be honest, in a world full of people who willfully stay ignorant to symbolism, the sorcerers, the dominators, the dark occultists, they are very symbol literate, and I'd imagine they are loving that most people willfully stay ignorant to symbolism because it makes their control become that much easier. And as Brandon has demonstrated so well in show 38 especially, is how cosmic symbols are used to sell us ideas, whether for good or for bad. It's subversive and mostly used for control. These symbols are. A lot of these symbols are. And to reiterate what subversive symbolism is it's a subliminal undermining of the public by usage of words, images, colors, numbers, symbols, anagrams, and rhythms, which are directed into the subconscious mind. If you want to go ahead and add something, Brandon.
Well, I would like to state that that was very well put together, Nate, and I'm glad that you brought all that to the table. Bringing up the five Platonic solids is very important for people to understand. I think that is something that a lot of people tend to steer away from when it comes to this knowledge. One thing I do want to tap onto or you know, talk about and bring up was something that you said at the beginning, which was about science and how they say there is no real proof for symbolism. And I said this on podcast 38 as well, which is they're very hypocritical when it comes to this, because without symbols, without the symbolic nature of reality, they have no means to gather evidence whatsoever, because all the evidence that they're gathering is based off symbolism, whether it's done through a microscope or anything studied in quantum mechanics or anything that's studied in a physical level where we're repeating the sciences over and over and seeing if we get the same result or different results. We are using a symbolic reference and a symbolic nature to understand these things. And this goes two ways. One way is that we are determining the symbols of nature and what they actually are and whether they are constant or variables. And also, we are using our own symbolism that we've mimicked from nature to understand these things, because all of our languages at some level are based off of things that we see and hear in nature. All of our forms that we create are based off of things that we see and hear in nature. And this also goes with the emotions too. And a lot of this goes back to what I spoke about when it goes to archetypes, that the entire universe is based off of an archetypal building block structure. And it is reasonable to conclude to build something, you have to have the building materials to construct. And if you do not, then you will not construct anything because you don't have the building blocks to do that. And this is what it comes down to, is that symbols and the archetypes of the universe are our building blocks to build things up with. And they are a means of transference of information for us to gather meaning within the realm that we exist and within ourselves. So I feel it's really, really insane that we see the supposed geniuses of the world poo-poo symbolism and really you know, dog on it and disregard it as not a form of science, while they themselves, their entire idea of scientific deduction is based upon symbolism, and without that, they have no means of understanding anything in reality.
Right. They're waiting on some, you know, well-known paid lab coat guy to tell them what symbolism is and that it actually does something. And even then, they probably would dismiss it, because, I mean, people actually have come forth that have made it into the mainstream, and, you know, it's just, it is dismissed. But that's a big loss for a lot of people, or for most people who have that mindset, because it really, truly is incredible when you get into the science and art of symbolism, because it really does reveal so much about who we are and how we operate and how we can, you know, really understand our past. So it's so, so vital to understand, and, you know, it's just, it really is unfortunate.
I can't agree with you anymore on that. I think that's one of the major problems with the world is that people don't see it through the eyes of a symbolic, literate mind, you know? And we have a lot of people who intuit a lot of symbolism, but if the intuition is not filtered through the intellect, then you have no meaning of finding the purpose or the actual meaning. What I should say is that you have no means of finding the meaning or purpose of that message. Mm-hmm. You know, I find that very often than not, that we see people who will have a great intuition, but they have no meaning of filtering it through their intellect, which means they don't understand what the intuition is really telling them. They're just kind of assuming what it's telling them, which is fine. You know, we all make assumptions about all kinds of stuff. We have to, but it's better to get to the gnosis of that intuition by filtering it through the left brain, you know?
Right. And I think a lot of people kind of have the mindset of like the pseudo-crystal spiritualism when it comes to symbolism, you know, where it's like they think like, oh, you know, what do crystals actually do? And, you know, I could say, well, you know, they do have, you know, certain energy. It's not like they're just created for no reason. But, you know, the way that people use crystals, kind of, you know, that new agey way, it is a little funky. You know, it definitely is a turnoff to a lot of left brainers. And I can understand that, because it doesn't really do much for me either. However, I think that it's just, you know, when you don't, you know, look at, like, if you're ignorant to crystals, if you're ignorant to like what they actually can do to their, you know, what kind of energy they do possess, or the energy that they take, the energy that they consume, you know, it's, I think that, you know, because, like, you know, supposedly a lot of crystals can actually like consume bad energy too, not just give good energy, but consume bad energy. And I think like, there, or how you can charge a crystal in the sun. I think there's truth to those things. And I know that if I were to become more crystal literate, I would probably respect them more and understand them more. It doesn't mean that I'd, you know, believe in the powers that they possess. But I think, you know, the point about symbolism is, when you become literate of the meaning and you start to see the mathematical equation add up, and from the meaning to what the symbol is and what the symbol's, you know, telling you, and you're listening for it, then you start to really have a beautiful unfoldment, almost like the lotus flower. You know, you just, it starts to unfold and you start to, you know, see the whole flower for what it is. And I think that it's so, so important that we give things like this a chance and not just throw it away as some kind of pseudo spiritual bunk. And because, you know, people have been doing it for thousands of years. You can't just say like, oh, well, people have been doing it this long that, you know, there's nothing to it. It's like, well, there actually is. You're just not opening your mind and, you know, allowing it to unfold. And that's really the truth.
Absolutely, Nate. It's very interesting that you bring up the crystals things, because I always point out crystals to people and I, you know, prove to them, hey, your cell phone is using crystals. Your television is using quartz crystals. Radios were first made with quartz crystals, you know?
Right.
There's all these technological applications for crystals, but if the crystal doesn't fall in the means of technological application, then all of a sudden it becomes pseudoscience or some kind of quackery, right?
Right.
But yet we do know that everything has a vibrational frequency that it releases, and all things can absorb too. We have the L and the mag coming together, the electromagnetic fields working constantly all around us, and so do crystals. This is why they can absorb or put out good and negative energy depending on what's going on with them. So we can say that it is a biotechnology. It is affecting us at a certain level. Now, does it affect us to the degrees that a lot of people says it does? Well, I don't think so. You know, I think a lot of the new age stuff really likes to embellish a lot of these effects, but can it give us good results? Well, absolutely. Can Right. we find purpose for these things and use for them in our own daily lives? Absolutely. 100%. You know, I got into crystals pretty big for a long time, and I definitely had some positive results from using them in many, many ways. So yeah, that's just another thing. You're completely right. It's like, oh, if it doesn't fall into the realm of technological use, then it obviously must be some kind of quackery. And this is just absolute nonsense. You know, it's just garbage. Mm-hmm. We do have to understand and broaden our own minds to understand that there are things in reality that do affect us, you know, physically. You know, there are things that do affect our psyche, that do affect our emotions, that do deal and interact with energies and frequencies at this level, you know, of reality.
Absolutely. It's such a vast topic, and, you know, to go down that road of symbolism you just can't go wrong with it. That's the beauty of it, because the more symbolic you become in your mind, or the more symbolical minded, I don't know if that's the right word, but the more you become symbol literate, the more everything starts to unfold. You start to see nature before your eyes like you've never seen it. And that is 100% unwaveringly the truth. And I know that definitively. So another type of symbolism that I really am, you know, like I really love to study and I am very infatuated with is stellar symbolism. And Brandon is going to give us a breakdown of the subversive use of stellar symbolism. So if you want to, Brandon, go ahead and let us know a little bit about that.
Yes, since I've been covering a lot of astrotheological symbolism and its uses in, you know, commerce and media and Hollywood and things like that, I felt the continuation with this topic would be very, very wise for us to go down. The first thing I would like to say is that when I speak through these next few slides that you can find on the Cubbyhole website, the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to be giving you the meaning and interpretation of the symbol, and it's going to be positive and negative, both uses of them. And like Nate said, it is neither at its essence, but it's, you know, I'm talking about how it's being used. But at a certain level, there is an innate essence of meaning to all of these symbols that is unwaverable. It's innate. It does not change. It's immutable. So that's what we're trying to get to, is the root of that essence of the symbols. So, and how it relates back to our subconscious mind and our own psyches, and how it affects us on an emotional and mental level in our own daily lives. So when it comes to stellar symbolism, it is one of the most occulted forms of symbolic understanding that I have ever come across. It is very easy to find solar and lunar symbolism all over the place. And yeah, some may say that, oh, well, we do have a lot of symbols for, you know, let's say the stars and the heavens above. And that is correct. We do. We do have a lot of places that we find these symbols being used. Like I broke down the star in episode 38. When I'm specifically speaking about stellar symbolism, it is more so in the context of the stellar cult and the most ancient symbol and forms, the most ancient symbolic forms that we have ever used that have been carried down the history with us into the modern day, and how they have been perverted and actually almost lost. You know, most of these symbols and meanings have almost been completely lost, and it is luckily that we have some remnants of these symbols left to piece back together the ancients' understanding of these symbols. So the first symbol I'm going to get to, and you can follow along with these slides, is the double-headed axe, or also known as the gavel. This is one of the oldest symbols known to man, and it is one of the most powerful symbols that has ever come into existence. It holds almost every single form of science and knowledge within its form. And like I explained before, the more simple the symbol, the more knowledge that can be stored within it. And this symbol was one of the first symbols of the Kemetian people that, and Kemet is Egypt, by the way, but of the Kemetian people and the stellar cult. So if you're looking at the slide with me, I'll give the meaning and interpretation of the symbol that you see on the screen. Now, what you see on the screen is three sticks crossed, and it is very important to understand the shape of the symbol. And first thing I would like to say is pull out whatever you can just by looking at the symbol intuitively. A lot of people tend to rely upon other people's meanings and interpretations. Well, the first thing you should definitely do is see what you can find. Do your own work and see what you can pull out of any of these symbols and see what resonates with you at that level. And see if it is ubiquitous with what somebody else is saying, or like myself, you know? So the meaning of this symbol, in the most simplistic way, this is going to be the most simple explanation of the meaning of each of these symbols I'm going to go through, especially this gavel symbol. I could not cover or hope to cover the entirety of the vast amount of knowledge that is stored within any of these symbols, especially this one. So the meaning of this symbol is, simply put, the highest of high. It is divine authority. It is representative of the one great spirit. It is representative of unity, alignment. It is representative of truth, creation, eternity, omnipresence, direction, and extension of power. Now I'm going to give a little bit of history to help you understand why this is. And I'm also going to explain how this connects to nature and how this is the first symbol of nature. So the sacred double-headed axe, which is called the Egyptian Neter or Netcher, which is spelled N-E-T-E-R. And in the Egyptian language, there was no vowels, so it was just spelled N-T-R. And this is where we get our word nature from. And this is very, very important to understand, because this is the first symbol of nature that was put into form that is carried down throughout the ages to us in the modern day. And this symbol was created by the stellar people and their advancement and their evolution. And this was representative of a pantheistic worldview where nature was looked at as the one great spirit. This is why it's associated as well with the one great spirit. And if you're comfortable calling it God, then call it God. A lot of people in Freemasonry call it the grand architect of the universe. I personally like that phrase. I tend to use that quite a bit. So, like I said, the word nature or nature is where we get our word nature from. So the single-headed axe, which is a further evolution of this, which I will be explaining in the future, but I'm going to go ahead and just give you a brief understanding of this here, represents primacy in the north and comes after double-headed axe. So it's a further evolution where we have now different types of implements in our tool making and also in our mythology. And so you see the change from the double-headed axe into the single-headed axe. And we're going to talk about that, like I said, in a future slide, and I just wanted to bring that up here. But this first double-headed axe also means double power, and it was the balance between the pole stars, venerating in the Egyptian mythology of Horus and Set, but also matter and spirit, or the north and south. As the axe became single, it started to represent material over the spiritual realm. Since the south is venerating the spirit realm and the north is venerating the material realm or the day sky. And I spoke about primacy in the day sky before in the previous episode. So this is also where we get our modern flagpole from, and the flag is derived from. But this symbol comes from the earliest life cults and hero cults that came into existence in ancient Kemet. And eventually they turned into the death cults, where the mythology started to turn into the eschatology. And there's an overlap between mythology and eschatology. Now, eschatology simply means the final resting place of the soul or the spirit. So the first phase of the gavel was the three sticks cross. The second phase of the gavel was known as the sacred axe, the double-headed axe. And it represented the grand chief, the great hammer, like the hammer of Thor, and was another symbol for Horus, their chief hero, because the stellar people's primary deity was Horus of the northern polar constellation. And this also gets turned into Horus of the double horizon, or the cleaver of the way, in the first solar cults later on. So the first primary deity of the ancient Egyptians and the stellar people was Set. And a lot of people get this confused because they think Horus comes before Set, but it was actually Set that was the first primary deity, and he was the god of the South Pole. And this is because spirit was seen to reign over material. It was seen as the causal cause to the ancient people. So that's very important to understand, and I know that is a lot to take in when I just said I was going to try to keep it simple, but that's the simplest way I can go over this symbol, because it's such a powerful symbol. There's so much to it that we really do need to understand some of the history behind this. And I hope I did a decent job explaining some of that, because there's so much more to this that, I couldn't hope to explain all of this. But if we take a look back at this symbol, we can see why these things are associated this way. Well, why is it associated as the highest of high? Well, this is because of the veneration into the northern polar constellation known as Ursa Minor, where we have the northern pole star. And this was looked at as the divine architect of the universe, the northern pole star, the highest of high. Why is it unity? Well, it's about balance. It's about balance coming into the center. It's about centerness, or the centropic force of nature. You know, and this is, if you look at it, you could say that all the lines are directed inner into that inner point. It's about alignment as well, right? So it's about unity and alignment. So this is about the left brain and right brain, the sacred masculine energies and feminine energies coming together. This was about truth, because that ties in with divine authority. The truth is the only authority in existence. It's about creation because it's has to do with God. It has to do with nature. It's about a creative principle in reality. It's about eternity because it is seen to never change. It is always there, and it is a never-changing thing that remains the same no matter what, seemingly, obviously. There are little bits of change, but from our naked eye, it does not change. It's about omnipresence because it is also seen as, you know, the divine deity. It's about direction. So if you look at the symbol, it looks like a signpost as well. It looks like a four-directional signpost. And it is our sign that directs us to the truth. That's what this is. It's a guide to teach us how to get back to the center of truth. But it's also about spatial awareness, because we find this, that it holds all the science of which movements we can make of spatial awareness. You can put that top section of the gavel or the double-headed axe in a cube, and you'll understand what I mean about that. Nathan did a great job of explaining this in his previous presentation called Earthbrain. Give me 1 second, Nate.
Thanks, dog. Thanks for the howling ovation.
Come on, Sophie. That was my grandmother. She's taken off.
Come on. Oh, that was her that was howling?
No, that was the dog. That was definitely the dog. I forgot to tell her that I was about to record, and she was taken off to her friend's house. So, but yeah, we can just continue off from that. So the next and final explanation here is it's about extension of power, because this eventually gets implemented into our tool making, which becomes things like a hammer, where we take a rock and strap it to a stick, and we start to carve on that rock and create an axe from that rock. But it's about extension of power, and this is because we started to implement this symbol into our own tool making, which became things like, you know, a hammer or a hatchet or a double-headed hammer, obviously, where we take a stone and strap it to a stick. And then we eventually carve that stone out as well and strap it to a stick to make something sharp that we can, you know, cleave things with. So it's the cleaver of the way. It cuts and creates two things. But the hammer is also seen to be a symbol of judgment, of divine judgment. So I want to give a couple examples of how this symbol is used. And I only got three here because it's very hard to find this symbol being used in the world besides in very specific areas. So one place that we see it all the time, one place we see this symbol being used subversively, when you go shopping. If you are a shopper at Walmart, that's their symbol. They use the symbol of the gavel. It looks like a star. And there's a lot more to this when it comes to the seven points of this and the mythos of Horus, but I'm not going to explain all that right now. I'm just going to give you the explanation of the subversive uses here. So yeah, Walmart is using the symbol of the gavel as a proxy for, you know, to be the one great spirit, the place where you go to get all your information, the place that you go to get the truth, the place that you go to get your nutrition, right? All this stuff. So it is taking up that position of a grand architect. We also see the symbol in a military operation called Jade Helm. And if you look at the next slide, you'll see this symbol where you have two arrows crossed over top of a dagger. And then over top of the two arrows, you have a wooden shoe. And this wooden shoe was the shoe that they would put on the Jews in Nazi Germany to make sure that if the Jews were trying to escape, they could hear them running down the streets and they could make sure to execute them or catch them. Okay, so this is very, very dark symbolism being used here. It also says, master the human domain. So this is all about control. This is one of the most dark symbols, symbolic associations of the gavel being used. So if you're not familiar with Jade Helm, I definitely recommend looking into that.
But I mean, that symbol right there is so powerful. You have two arrows crossed over a dagger, and then you have the shoe in the middle of that. And this is what the military is using. You see the dark occult using subversive symbolism all over the place in our world. And this is about control. I mean, it says it right on there. Master the human domains. They want to be the masters. They're claiming to be the owners of the human domain. Another place that we see the symbol is in the courtrooms. This symbol is used as judgment from the judge himself. There's a lot of symbolism in courtrooms, and we spoke upon maritime admiralty law a little bit in the past, but this does tie in with that. But the judge is using this symbol of the gavel to represent that he is the divine authority, that he gets to say, or he or she gets to say what, you know, is right and wrong. They determine arbitrarily what right and wrong is. And this is that extension of power, because they are claiming that they are God's deputies, or they are actually God itself. They are claiming they are the highest of high. And this is very, very dark symbolism. And the picture that I have provided there for the gavel is actually a Freemasonic gavel. And we find more often than not that Freemasonry is associated with municipality, at least the corrupted versions of Freemasonry, which we will be explaining the difference here later on. So I hope to explain the symbol much more clearly in the future. And I know that I probably could have done a better job here, but this is an extremely powerful symbol. And I could not say that enough, that people need to understand this symbol in particular. And if you're very interested in learning more about the symbol, I would recommend checking out Albert Churchward's work from books like The Arcana of Freemasonry, Signs and Symbols, The Evolution of the Human Race. Some of his books are very, very important to understand this symbol and the evolution of the three hero cults that I'm speaking about. So we're going to continue on here to the next.
Okay, guys, this show is actually at its end. Brandon and I recorded 3 hours worth and decided to split the whole episode into three shows. So make sure to follow up to the next couple of episodes as we go further into stellar symbolism, the scientific and subversive uses of it, including bear symbolism, star symbolism, and the all-seeing eye symbolism. And the third part of this show will be episode 42. And there we will begin to cover Freemasonry. It is very important to listen to these shows in order. The value is way greater and the confusion will be way less. So we hope you found clarity and value in this show today. And you can find more shows, presentations, and news at cubbyhole.com. That's CubbyHole.com. Plus Douglas Martin's, Brandon's, and my work is now up on OneGreatWorkNetwork.com. And as for now, a new show comes out every Friday at 12 p.m. Pacific time. So stay tuned for more. And if you have any questions regarding the topics for these shows or the Seed for Growth event, please email us at cubbyhole@mail.com. That's cubbyhole@mail.com. Also, any donations are appreciated, as anything that's given will go directly to the Cubbyhole website. Just hit the donations button on the website and it's set up pretty easy to operate from there. So, okay, guys, I'm your host, Nate Kapp. Thank you for listening. And remember, do no harm, defend truth, and keep transcending dogma.